Hoi, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Toppy, toppy, toppy.
It's Bergkamp.
Hashtag fuck Ellis.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and out.
Well done. Bye bye.
Hello and welcome to a Bergkamp Wonderland and Arsenal, sadly, podcast. I am your host, Chris, as I have been on many times through many different eras over many different questions and many different subjects. Well, tonight is going to be very debated, I think is probably a good word to use. There's going to be lots of views here, back and forth, positives, negatives. It'll be like John Welsh at the Clap Clinic. Anyway, enough of that. We're keeping it classy tonight because we've got the legend that is Mr. Hollick, first of all. So good evening, Dave.
Evening, Chris. Thank you very much for having me on again.
Always a pleasure, never a chore, sir. We owe you, not the other way around. And we've also got Tappy Tappy himself. Hello, Jace.
Why did I start that?
I don't know, because it's going to stick.
Stick, by God. It's like gonorrhea.
I tell you, I think they're shouting at him
in the streets of Cardiff, you know.
They are. I'm seriously thinking about doing a T-shirt line. I think it'll fly. I really do. So anyway, gents, let's get straight into it this week because we've got lots to discuss. We're kind of going to go sort of vaguely with topics and then kind of expand as we go. So I want to start what's fresh in the memory, which was the Brighton match on Sunday. Obviously, there's a lot of upset people out there. There's also a lot of people in reflective mood and some people that are just, as usual, throwing their life out with the baby and the bathwater and all that jazz. So we'll try and keep it sort of balanced as best we can without going through the whole team and everything, because Jason, John and Drew did that very well on the radio show. Go listen, or the live show, I should say. Go listen if you haven't. Let's just talk about the overall day. Dave, I want to start with you because it was quite an emotional day for you. And you can obviously explain to the listeners why, feel free. But what was the general atmosphere pre and post game? And what was your overall thoughts on the result and the overall performance of the team?
Well, pre-game, of course, everybody has different experiences, and I had an absolutely great time. Met a bunch of people that I know up at the 12 Pins. Everyone was in good spirits. Everyone, I think, was confident and not worried about what was going to happen later on that day. And obviously what Spurs had done the day before had thrown open the door. We all thought, that's it, we'll go smashing through it next week because Everton will probably get a point at White Hart Lane. So the mood generally beforehand was good. It was a funny day for me for a couple of reasons. One, the season ticket I've had for so long. That was my last day in that seat because I just can't justify it anymore with all the evening games, with next season's Saturday evening games kicking in. I think I've only made about 8 or 9 games this year, so it'll be even less next year. And it was a bit of a moment for me. The other point, of course, was the game itself, which, like you say, was covered well on the game. The atmosphere at the game, I thought, was good to start with, because obviously we started brightly with Mkhitaryan hitting the post, with us getting the penalty. But then the football went backwards from there. We got into this habit where we get into a passing sideways, backwards, possession is king, creativity is to be ignored at every possible moment. And the game therefore lost the crowd a little bit as well. And with Brighton coming back into it and getting the point, well, the mood could be summed up in two words, really, or the reaction to two words, Granit Xhaka. The first time he touched the ball after conceding the penalty, which I thought, by the way, other referees might not have given, but nonetheless, having conceded the penalty, the first time he touched the ball afterwards, you could audibly hear about a third of the crowd booing. And then obviously when he was substituted, the same thing happened. And at the final whistle, it was just a crescendo of it aimed at the team, I suspect, rather than the coach, or probably both of them. But the mood, it didn't turn ugly as it has done in the last couple of years, but certainly it was a bit of a damp squib, the after-match presentation, because half of the crowd had vanished a little bit quickly, and they dragged it on a bit. They didn't get Aaron Ramsey out there quickly enough, or the players that were leaving. And, of course, that was the other big emotional bit, because Aaron saying goodbye, that did for a lot of people in the crowd, and him as well, of course.
Yeah, we will definitely touch on that, because I'm sure a certain someone might have a few things to say on that. So speaking of that certain someone, Jason, I've called this sort of opening section Brighton - the aftermath, because I feel like there's more to discuss after the game than there is during it. I think Dave's perfectly summed up the game itself. You know, we started well. We looked like a team that were there to you know, lay down a marker. We got the early goal. And then things, you could almost see Brighton coming back into it. You could almost see them scoring. I think the bit that I actually thought they'd score, I had a bet on them to score. I thought both teams would get a goal, but I thought we'd kick on and get the win. When we didn't, Dave's touching it there, the atmosphere wasn't great. What do you sort of put down, not the most recent week's performances, but that particular performance? I mean, is it just a little bit unlucky? Were the substitutions not good enough? Should we have gone for broke more? Or is it just one of those games that we've had all too often this season, do you think?
I think it's a little bit from a lot of those points, okay? Obviously, doing the live show, you know, we watch most of the games. I think of the only couple I've missed this season, I've listened to on Arsenal player, because I've been busy and what have you. One of the things that struck me, and even during the 22 match winning streak, or you know, not winning streak rather, but unbeaten streak, there are times where we play with a lack of ambition. Okay, if it's not working one way, we have no way of changing how we're set up, etc. You know, I thought the substitutions were way too late. I didn't understand the 3-1 at once. I thought, you know, a bit of width would have helped, but we'd lost impetus early, and we weren't able to regain that impetus, if you know what I mean. And then we just kind of lack of ambition, and it kind of looks, if you set up two banks of four, and you're well organized against us, okay, when we're trying to play through, because the midfield pushes up too high, and we haven't got any real gas in the team. Teams know as soon as you turn that ball over, you launch it down the channels. And they, you know, undoubtedly, whatever Premier League team you play against, they have gas in their team, proper gas. And so they get their quick guys on it, and all of a sudden, you're backpedaling. Now, by the time these guys have turned, and, you know, yes, Granjaka had a bad day at the office on Sunday. There's no getting away from that. But, you know, he's not built for this type of game. You know, he's built to quarterback it. When we kind of don't seem to be playing to player strengths, which is one of, you know, which is one of my gripes at the moment. But, you know, unfortunately, from the midfield perspective, you've only got Aaron Ramsey who's going to change things by getting ahead of the ball and getting beyond. Danny Welbeck's injured as well, as we all know. Nketiah, you could have put Nketiah on, but that's a massive ask. You know, even when you saw Iwobi putting good balls in and into the box, nobody's there. You know, everybody, we don't seem to have a late runner coming in. You know, we're not covering the angles. Everybody's always in certain positions. It's all a little too static. And it's not something new. It's something we've seen throughout the season. And so for me, yeah, that's a massive, massive issue. You know, it's all well and good changing your setup from game here to game there, but you've got to get a style of play going. You've got to get plan A right first. Then you build on plan B. Then you build on plan C. And it doesn't look as if we've, you know, we're a jack of all trades at the moment. I'm a master of none.
Yeah, I think that's probably well summed up. Dave, just looking at the sort of, again, the aftermath of Brighton, I just want to touch on the kind of worrying run of form, basically. My personal opinion is that I feel that we've almost sort of run out of legs a bit in the league campaign. And I know that seems like a weird thing to say because we've performed very well in the Europa League, but it almost feels like we've subconsciously prioritised that Europa run and almost just taken our eye off the ball along with all the other teams that are dropping points. Spurs, you know, Chelsea have probably been the most consistent, and that's saying something, as they've dropped points as well. It feels like the legs have gone. It feels like we've sort of said, look, we can only really do one or two of these. But nevertheless, whether you're positive as I am or slightly sceptical, as a lot of people are, games against Crystal Palace at home, Wolves away, Leicester away, I think you could probably even throw in the penalty in the last minute against Spurs, as well as the Everton away game and yesterday. It is worrying, isn't it, for a club of this size that has traditionally performed well in these games.
What makes it even more so is the fact that when Unai Emery arrived, much store was made out of the fact that the players were being worked that much harder so that they could adapt to his style, whatever his style was going to be. And so they allegedly started from a point at which they were fitter than they've ever been. I do know, because I've seen it firsthand, the sort of work that's done with them physically in between matches. And technically, it looks as though they're doing all of the right things. But in April, certainly, they seem to run out of gas, like you say. And that may be down to the fact that we had 8 games in quick succession. But we have been rotating the side quite a bit. So generally, it's been, with the exception, I think, of Koscielny, who has been overplayed, I think generally you've had fresh legs on there most of the time. So that is a concern. There is another one that is another possible explanation for what's gone on, but I think we might come to that if we are. I expect us to get onto the subject of Unai Emery at some point.
It's next on my agenda, funnily enough.
Can I come in there? Yeah. Sorry, guys. Don't if I come in on that. I mean, I don't see, you know, the last few games as any different to Fulham at home, Cardiff away, Cardiff at home, okay? If you actually look at the style of play we're putting out, then you can change the setup a little bit, okay? But if you look at the players we've got, you look at Alexandre Lacazette, okay? He loves a runner coming off in, that one-touch move, okay? Mesut Ozil loves a runner, right? The problem we've got is our midfield is a little too immobile for that, you know. It's a massive ask on somebody like Matteo Guendouzi or Torreira to do this kind of job, which they're not used to. And one of the things, you know, even during the 22-match unbeaten run, we spoke about in the live show this week, it papered over the cracks a lot of the time. You know, I can go back to radio shows where myself and John are having a right old moan about the style of football we're playing. If you look at the teams who are doing well across Europe, you know, Barcelona, Juventus, you know, Bayern, you look at Liverpool and City this season, okay, they play with ambition a lot of the time. A lot of these teams play with ambition and they play with gas and they get people running at defences. We haven't done that this season, have we? It's all a little bit too easy to defend against. Against Wolves, you looked, and again on Sunday, you look at those two banks of four and nobody's worried because nobody's coming in behind. And I think that's, you know, you can talk about us running out of gas and what have you, but we've put out some pretty strong teams and we've come unstuck. And I think it's, you can call it a personnel issue, you can call it a tactical issue, but, you know, you need speed and you need runners. And you look at our style of players, they thrive off that.
Yeah, I think that's some good points there. And that's probably something we'll also touch on in a bit when we have a look at the squad, which I want to do tonight as well. I feel as well a little bit like we're saying to Dave there about the sort of legs element. I think we're all quick to overlook the difference between Premier League football and European football as well. European teams, if you look at the Napoli game in particular, they give you more time to build up slow and they give you time on the ball. Premier League teams, whether it's Burnley, Crystal Palace, Everton or Man City, they will not always necessarily press you, but they'll always have a threat. They'll always be buzzing in and around you. They'll always be putting pressure on a bad touch. European teams do tend to sit back and say, okay, well, what have you got? And we'll go against that. And I think that probably suits our game more, which is why the form's been so different in terms of where we are.
But Bate Borisov ran away.
Oh, yeah. There's no, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing, okay? And yes, everybody's going to go, oh, here he goes again. When you've got a runner coming from midfield, okay, somebody who links up well with other players, it makes a massive difference. You know who got injured when our form dropped off. I don't need to really say it. It's very difficult for teams who, you know, for players to replicate somebody else's style of game. And you've got to get ahead of the ball. You've just got to get ahead of the ball. You've got to make defences think. And defences don't have to think against us. It's either all coming down the flanks via collar and whoever's playing right back at the time. Hardly anything goes through the middle unless you've got a certain guy playing who's gone now.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I do think it's a fair point. I say we'll definitely touch on that or expand on that in a minute. I want to move on. Dave rather nicely set us up there onto Unai Emery as a whole. Personally, this is only my personal opinion. It might not be the agreement of others on the pod or indeed in general. But I find people asking or calling for his head. I find that a joke. I find that hilarious. And I find it very reactionary. And I know that I'm sure other supporters of other clubs are just as knee-jerk as ours. But obviously, I see Arsenal Twitter more than I do everyone else's. And I do think some of the tweets that people chuck out, you know, minutes after games, during games sometimes, which is amazing when they're supposed to be watching a game, but still, are a bit reactional. But there does seem to be a growing concern, shall we say. I'll touch on the behind the scenes bit in a minute because I think there's a lot to investigate there. But Dave, from your perspective, there is this whole thing about style of play. I get that. There's also a lot going around about stats and XG, which frankly bores me to tears, but it's there. If you want to look at it, go for gold. But more important than that, are we not on par with where we felt Emre would be? And are we almost sort of cheesed off so much now because we actually got so close to being ahead of where we wanted to be that people are just taking it a little bit too far in the extent that they're thinking, oh, well, this manager can't do it because we should have done it. Whereas if you just said pre-season, we'll be fifth or sixth, people would have gone, fair enough.
All of these things, a combination thereof. If you were to ask me my direct opinion, then I would say, as long as there is nothing else involved, that he should be given a second year. He should be given a summer in order to sign more of his players, and he should be given a second year. I do understand those people who would argue that after making a very promising start and setting a high expectation, the spectacular crash in the second half of the season is very worrying. And whatever the reason for that is, just the fact that it's happened, I think is a valid reason for people to think we're going in the wrong direction. I do think you're right. At the start of the season, if you'd said, we're probably going to finish fifth, sixth again, then everyone would have said, well, in his first year, yes, we'll accept it. But that great start means that that was all changed, that level of expectation. And so I do understand when people say, how long do you let it go? How long do you let it drift? The second question is, the side to it is the Bruce Brioch side. Has he fallen out with any of the players, or, as some would have you believe, all of them? Now, if that is the case, then as with Rioch only took on one player, Ian Wright, and there was only ever going to be one winner in that situation. If, and I say if because rumours that come out of places are not fact, and so often they turn out to be nonsense, but the fact is they're there, and if there has been a falling out with the players, then again, I think his position would be untenable, and that would be every justification to get rid of him. But I wouldn't do it on rumours. Only the people in who know the facts will be making that decision.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Jace, you've been very vocal about style of play this season. You know, it's a big thing to you, and I completely understand that and get it. You know, I suppose I slightly differ in the extent that I want to see the club winning. Obviously, I'd love to see us playing the silky stuff, but you've quite rightly spoken out and said that it's not been fun to watch. It's been a bit of a drag. Do you feel that there's been certain things that you could it's not so much defending Unai Emery, but would you say that there's been certain things where you could say, actually, if we'd have had X, Y, or Z in place, or if we'd have had that, you know, the second year, for example, was this year more about getting identity, or was this year more about achieving that top four status, or is it a bit of both for you? You know, which side of the fence do you come down on, and what needs to be improved, do you think?
Well, beginning the season, as differing as our views on football can be, yourself and I both predicted top three finish and a Europa League win. Okay, when he was announced, I thought this guy was the right man. Okay, and one of the reasons for it would be an identity, a football identity. You get that right, okay? You know, it's the same as building a house, okay? Any ball sport, any physical ball sport, get your identity right, okay? Players know what they're doing, and you build upon solid foundations. Right? It's not rocket science. It's really, really simple, okay? He hasn't done that at all. And he leaves himself wide open. Now, people say, oh, it's not his squad, okay? Well, there were five new players in the summer. There's a new goalkeeper. There's a new centre-half, there are two new midfielders, and Lichtsteiner. Am I missing anybody else?
Guendouzi.
Yeah. Two midfielders, Torreira.
Yeah.
So there's five new players to that squad, okay? Now, obviously, in defence of Unai, a lot has happened behind the scenes, okay? An awful lot has happened behind the scenes. You hear Dave now, Dave's mentioning rumours that he's fallen out with all the players or whatever. I don't know anything about that. I know absolutely zero about it. And, you know, what we have seen this season is the executive side of the club briefing against Aaron Ramsey, briefing against Sven Mislintat when they wanted to get them gone, in my view. And some of the briefings they let go, you know, one tried to go through Ornstein where, oh, he was Aaron was planning on going last season. You know, somebody behind the scenes says that he felt Aaron was planning to go last season. There's an awful lot of things which don't add up. And obviously, Unai as the coach, okay, has got to deal with all this as well. Because there's fallout from all this. It comes through the squad. There'll be people unhappy. You know, so you have a lot to deal with. The San Leahy, Mislintat business must have had an effect. You know, there were plans in place in the summer. The great triumvirate, you know, Ivan, the top, Sven, Raul. Then you've got Housfani doing the contracts, etc. All these things were set in place where there was going to be a plan going forward. Of course, by January, that's all fallen apart. Okay? The Suarez signing, you know, for any of us, it doesn't add up for any of us, does it? You know, so there's obviously a lot of things going on behind the scenes which none of us know about. So in his defence, yes, there's been a lot for him to have to deal with this season, but ultimately he's judged on the pitch. It doesn't look, you know, we all watch the games, boys. There's no football identity with us this season at all. So he hasn't got the building blocks in place yet. You know, as for style of football, it's garbage. It's utter garbage. It's not good enough. You know, only five games ago, we were in prime position to get third. A home loss to Crystal Palace. You know, Brighton, we've only won 2 points against Brighton. We've dropped 4 points against them this season, which would put us level pegging with Chelsea. Come on, they're 17th. They've only just avoided relegation. You can give all the excuses you want, but it's down to him. If he wants to be successful at this club, he has to imprint his character and his DNA on the club and get us a style of football, then concentrate on plan B and plan C. But guess playing a style of ambitious football, playing ambitious football and move forward. You know, I like Unai Emery. I want him to succeed. I want him to win this Europa Cup. But on his league form, you know, you know what I think. I'd get him gone tomorrow.
Fighting talk. We will slightly revisit that in a bit, because there's something else I want to touch on, which is slightly off topic, but in a similar line. So we'll come back to that. Just one other quick thing on this side of things, Dave. I just want to ask you, do you think that our fans in particular are maybe a little bit too heavily focused on what others are doing, which bleeds into what we're doing as well? Like, what I mean by that is we all accept Liverpool and Manchester City are off in the distance. But because we see the absolute shit show that is at Manchester United, the strange sort of a season that Chelsea have had, where it's been here or there, has been up or down. And then there's the other lot who, you know, let's be honest, we just keep an eye on them because it's funny. Do you think that that's bled into this a little bit? Like, for example, if they'd have won their games, do you think our sort of fans would have, I'm not saying would have accepted the results, but would have gone, well, you know, we never expected to be there? Is it more that we've missed the chance because of how others have been in the focus for their failings at the same time?
I think that with the ready availability of social media these days, more people are given a platform to air their views. I think there have always been people who have been quick to jump on situations when things aren't going that well and who have extreme views. It's just that in the past, unless you were in the pub with them, you didn't hear them, you didn't worry about it. Now you have television channels dedicated to them. It's bloody ridiculous. But there are always going to be that broad range of opinions out there. And the loudest voices are usually the dissenters. So if you think about the number of people you actually engage with on the internet who are Arsenal supporters, and you think how many are in the ground every other week, it's a relatively small percentage. But the perception is that the supporter base is turning rapidly against the side at certain situations. You can't avoid it, I'm afraid.
No, that's true. The one that gets me the most, and it frustrates the life out of me, is that, yeah, I hold my hands up. I'm notoriously positive to the point where sometimes it's actually quite fun to go fishing. Jason knows what I mean by that. but it does grip me when you tweet positivity and you get met with, you know, to be fair, not always hostility, but people going, no, I've got every right to be negative. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm not saying you haven't. I'm just saying that I've got a right to go, it's not that bad, you know. And I sort of feel like you've either got to be burn it all down and shovel the remains, or unicorns and painted rainbows. There's never any in between, which I just find so strange. And you're right, David.
Well, that's the thing. These guys with the loudest voices as well usually have the most closed minds.
Yeah.
And so you can't engage in a debate with them because you're wrong before they start.
Yeah, mind's made up sort of thing, yeah.
And by the way, boys, I want to point out to you both, if you disagree with me, you are both wrong.
Oh, I mean, it stands to reason.
And there's the biggest one.
Exactly, there you go. If only we had, like, I don't know, some form of fan-based TV channel that we could... No, let's leave that behind. Jace, it was a day... I can't actually believe I'm going to say this is a positive, or to try and bring the mood up, because I'm just going to bring it straight back down again. But we did say a tearful goodbye. And of course we're going to talk a little bit about Aaron Ramsey here, but I think it's also poignant to make a point of saying that Petr Cech and we now know Danny Welbeck will also be going in the summer. And to add to that, and I can hear John howling upset at the moment, I'm sure he's gutted that Stefan Lichtsteiner is also likely to be moved on. But we said goodbye to Aaron on the pitch. Obviously it was a very tearful farewell. I thought, you know, as I've said all along, you know, he's been classy throughout the experience. He's conducted himself with class and dignity. And to be fair, I think Petr Cech, in all the interviews he's given as well, we haven't heard a lot from Danny Welbeck, mainly because he's been in the treatment room, but obviously have your 50 pence on Aaron and just what you think we're going to lose in Cech and Welbeck at the end of the season as well.
I'd like to start with three of them, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, if you look at the three of the guys we're talking about there, three top blokes, okay, they've represented the club off the pitch at a quality, okay, three utter pros, you know, professional till the end. You know, you look at Danny Welbeck and all his injury issues, the fight he shows to come back each and every time. You know, it's a great, great. he shows great character each and every time. Petr Cech, you know, coming from Chelsea, it must have been a rift for him to leave the club, you know, because he'd been at Chelsea that long. And he's come in, and I thought he got a lot of unfair stick in front of an awful dodgy back line, you know. So, you know, the three top blokes, three top footballers, three top pros, and it's a sad day for all concerned. I mean, I'm not sure why we're letting Welbeck go. I really am not. I'm not sure why we're letting Aaron go. You know, I have no idea what the sense is behind all this. But for Cech, it's slightly different. He's retiring. You know, I wish him all the very best. I don't care where he goes. I don't care where he goes. I don't care what club he's at. I wish him the very best because he's, you know, he came to us at a difficult time. We had the Chesney and Ospina issues, etc. And he did give us a bit of solidity. We just couldn't sort out that back four, unfortunately, to get a whole defensive unit. Danny Welbeck, you know, if only he was a little bit sharper in front of goal. Was it that Anderlecht game where he got a hat-trick? Was it a hat-trick? He got a brace. You know, if only he could have replicated that a little bit more. Those fabulous goals against Leicester and Man United to remember him by. And Aaron Ramsey, you know, talk about the roller coaster of a football career at one club. I'm not going to mention the great goals. I'm not going to mention, you know, the appearances, the broken leg. I'm going to miss his ambition on the pitch. I'm going to miss his go forward. You know, the reason I love Aaron Ramsey is not about just him being Welsh. It's a bonus. It always has been. It's been a massive bonus. But the ambition with which the boy plays with, you know, you're getting forward, getting ahead of the ball, you know. When the chips are down, he's always going to show you real character. And, you know, I can't believe we're letting him go for nothing.
Do you, there was a few bits and bobs around, again, social media. People were sort of saying that the reason for the tears is because he'd been pushed out of the club. And there was a lot of shithousery going around where people, almost like people were trying to sort of make an excuse to blame the club for what's happened. And granted, like you said, I do think there was a, in fact, we'll probably touch on this in a minute. There was a colossal error in judgment about the way the whole thing has been concluded. I think it was no secret, Aaron, you said he'd like to play abroad at some point, but I think we probably all agree it's come a year, maybe too earlier than we'd have thought. But yeah, did you feel like there was that emotion to me was of a lad who, as he said in his own words, grew up at Arsenal, became a man at Arsenal, and he's leaving a family. You know, he's well liked in the dressing room, as indeed are Cech and Welbeck. They're big characters. It's not just the players, is it, to lose? So is that part of the bigger plan that we've got to look at now, where we've got to replace the characters as well as the ability they've got?
You know, we've gone over the Ramsey situation time and time again. The only bit I find distasteful, you know, the club withdrew the offer, that's fine, okay? The only thing I find distasteful about it was the briefing. He's greedy, all ego, you know what I mean? You know the things that were said, and they were released by the club. The same happened to Mislintat. I don't like it. You know, Arsenal have always been a club that have kept things behind closed doors, you know? If you're going to say something to somebody, say something positive and leave it go. You know, you saw Cesc leaving, RVP leaving. We didn't sink to those sort of depths. But the club has changed massively in the last 12 months, which we have to handle. For me, you know, I look at the likes of Rambo leaving, and I think, is that ambition leaving the club as well? How are you going to replace that type of player? Because as much as you like Eber Banega as a footballer, he ain't the answer. Do you know what I mean? You're asking the wrong guy. You're going to have to develop another younger player. That experience, that big match attitude has gone behind the scenes. You know, I saw something from Jack Wilshere, a tweet from Jack Wilshere. Rambo's turned up to one of his foundation gigs. Well, they're great friends. But, you know, on the tweet, he always turns up and supports me. It's stuff like that that's going to be missed. You know what it's like in a dressing room, boys. You know, it's not the loudest characters which are the ones which are the most important. It's the solid citizens. And people like Danny Welbeck, Peter Cech and Ramsey are obviously going to be missed. It's just, you know, it's a sad, sad situation. The emotion he showed, you know, that's the type of guy he is, you know? Yeah. And it's just sad to see.
Yeah, it was a sad thing. I think anybody that didn't sort of doff a cap to those scenes is a bit dead inside, to be honest. So it was sad. It's nice that a player sort of, or players go with our blessing, in light of what we've gone through with some players that have left in the past, but nevertheless that doesn't make it any easier. What was your
before you go to Dave in this, it's nice to see somebody be sorry to leave the club.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, instead of let's get out the door straight away, it's nice to see somebody showing emotion of what this club means to them, apart from just being us, you know?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And like you say, whether you like him as a bloke, as a player, whatever your views are, you know, I've said 100 times, I rate him very highly. I just feel that we've, as a club, may have taken the right decision in completely the wrong way. But whatever your thoughts are, I think you can all sort of afford him that moment and look back and say there's been some massive moments that have been, you know, right at the centre of our hearts. And that's where I want to sort of pick you in as well, Dave. I mean, how was it in the sense, you stuck around for that presentation, didn't you, after the game? Did it sort of help to bring the atmosphere around at all, or were people almost like you said, Aaron came out late, were people by then just kind of numb to it all, in effect?
Well, yeah, they did some, they had a big long video lead up to it where they were understandably talking about the successes of the ladies team and the under 18s, but you kind of wish that they'd done that more at half time so that at the end of the game they could get on with the presentations while people were still in the ground, and that lag let people go, and the half that were left, the atmosphere was as flat as you like until Aaron came on. And I think the bit that got to Aaron as much as anything, he wasn't expecting that great big one Aaron Ramsey chant to go round. And that did suddenly transform things with those that were left, and it set the tone. The other thing I'd say about it, leaving Aaron aside, is that was the way that we found out that Danny Welbeck was leaving, because I thought that was possibly not the best thing to do, because, again, no, people weren't prepared for that. And I think most people probably thought he was going to be offered something like a pay-as-you-play deal, given his injury record. But there you go. That was what they decided. But that didn't improve things, but certainly the Rambo presentation did.
Yeah, I did feel like the Welbeck one in particular did kind of just, I don't know, it left it's something a little bit uncomfortable about it. Like, even Danny himself looked like a player to sort of say, you know, I'm not comfortable with it. I don't know. It just didn't feel completely right.
I personally wonder how many of those, half of those people that left would have stayed had they known that Danny too was being presented as a leaver, because they wanted to show their appreciation for him too.
Yeah.
Question for you boys. I don't want to knock the club too much, okay? You know, it's getting boring, if you know what I mean. But I thought the Danny Welbeck business, it's a little bit shoddy. I don't know if you agree. You know, he didn't see, you know, you saw Cech and Rambo interviewed by Sky afterwards or whatever it was.
He was an afterthought, wasn't he? And the only thing I can think, and this is clutching at the strawiest of straws, maybe the fact that I think Danny will probably go and play somewhere else in England, whereas Cech's obviously retiring and Aaron's going abroad, maybe there was an element of we'll see him again about it. I don't know. Maybe that's, again, I'm clutching, but it did feel a little bit rushed, didn't it?
Look, I don't feel it should have been a massive, you know, he's been here, what, 4 or 5 seasons?
Four or five? Yeah.
Okay,
like that.
You know, he's been a bit part player over the last couple of seasons and his injury record's there. But, you know, if you're going to involve him in it, do it properly. You know, and I'm not saying treat them like legends or anything, but if you're going to do that sort of thing, do it properly.
And again, a huge presence in the dressing room. Every player I've heard interview say he's a really good influence and a bit of a joker and always high in spirits. And yeah, that's you can't always replace that. You know, at any level of football, I know all too well. Okay, so I mean that was kind of the Brighton day. I do just want to we'll keep this section fairly brief because there's a bit of a chunkier section I do want to get into in a second, but I do just want to look ahead to Thursday. Jace, I'll stick with you first of all. Regardless of what happened against Brighton, regardless of the fact that we'll play the kids against Burnley and probably lose 12-0, regardless of all of that, we've got to, as an Arsenal community or as an Arsenal fan base, we've got to get behind the lads now, haven't we? We're recording this live as Liverpool playing Barcelona. Liverpool scored early, and you can just tell that the crowd are up and they believe. I know they're deluded, but hey, that'll make me look really silly if they win now, won't it? But still, we've got to go to Valencia and get a job done, haven't we? I have a sneaking suspicion that Frankfurt-Chelsea game is not done and dusted yet. And I personally would love to play Frankfurt, A, because I don't want Chelsea anywhere near a final, and B, because my nerves would go through the floor if we play them in the final. But Valencia, I mean, what's your thoughts? What do you want to see us go and do there? Because I'm of the belief we need to go there and get a goal. Because one goal, see Napoli for this, that ends the tie, surely, doesn't it?
Look, you know, looking on that first game, yes, Valencia had their chances. Let's make no bones about it. We allowed them too many chances. Them going ahead was a bit of a shock. You know, they dominated a little bit. Then we got into it. You got to credit Aubameyang and Lacazette with their attitude on the day because our midfield is kind of lacking. You know, unfortunately, that's where we are at the moment. You know, we've got to get it down the flanks and to have a go at Valencia. You know, they came with five at the back and they still went ahead, you know, in that game. That being said and done, I think we've got the quality. I think we've got the players. This squad is much maligned at the moment. People are saying it's not up to much. People are saying, people are being quite rude about it. I don't think it's that bad. I really don't think it's that bad. I'm confident we're going to score out there. You know, whether we score first or second, I'm not really bothered. You know, how I'd like us to go out there with a bit of ambition, but just, you know, right, play three at the back, get all your width from Collar and AMN, okay, and tell Torreira, whoever it is, you anchor that midfield. You do not need to go past the halfway line. Let's be solid citizens at the back. But I'm more than confident of us getting a goal, and therefore I'm more than confident of us going through.
Yeah, well said. And Dave, your sort of overall thoughts, I mean, we go into it, as Jay said, and as everyone knows, we go into it 3-1 in front. You know, you'd think on paper we are the favourites. We said on the last show that third goal probably was the, not the killer goal, because obviously it's the second game, but it was a massive goal in terms of what we were looking at for the second leg, and it gives us that real springboard. Valencia, if you look at them sort of in La Liga, their home form is pretty good. In fact, I think they lost at the weekend to I think it's Ibar. But overall, that they've done pretty well. I think actually prior to that, I'm just looking at it now, their last home defeat in La Liga was, crikey, third of the 11th 2018 to Girona. So basically over a year since they've lost at home in La Liga. But do you fancy us, like Jay said, to go and get a goal and essentially kill the tie off? Because our two forwards, you'd always back them to get a chance and take one in these big away games, wouldn't you?
I agree about the goal, because with the stat they came out with last week, in 24 away games, we've scored in 21, something like that. If I were to play the devil's advocate, I would worry a little bit about just scoring once. Because Chase was mentioning them taking the lead last week. If they had any sorts of finishes, they would have been 3-0 up before we'd woken up. Yeah. Because they missed two absolute brahmas. So they create chances. If they've got a bit of finishing about them at home, a bit more confidence because they've got their crowd behind them, then I think it could still be a difficult night for us. But that's me playing the devil's advocate. I do think we probably get Koscielny back, absolutely crucially, as one of that three. And then, yeah, I think we've probably got a bloody mindedness enough to make one goal count enough.
This is the thing, sorry, this is the thing, Dave. You know, we were pushing up. We don't need to go after them tomorrow night, do we? You know, Thursday night, sorry. We don't need to go after them. We can have the back three sit quite deep. And if you can nullify that pace that they have on the break, you know, all of a sudden then they've got to work harder for it. And I don't fancy them playing through us. I think that all the chances that we let go or been scored on recently, you know, it's all about pace against us. So as long as we sit deep and say, hey, guys, come and break us down, you know, I think we'll be okay. But allowing them to play down those channels, we're asking for trouble.
I agree with every word of that, Jace, but that's exactly what we do. When we play a three, we play a high line. Absolutely we do. We play a high line and we push the fullbacks forward. Mm. We don't do what you're asking of them.
And
we never do. Because how many times does the one ball over behind them put us in the shit?
And you're forgetting that Agent Mustafi will be playing against his former club potentially at the Mestalla as well. So that's got trouble written all over it.
Mustafi's getting an awful lot of stuff.
I know, I couldn't resist.
He doesn't deserve. I find it ludicrous.
He had a very good game last Thursday.
He did, to be fair. And if you look at Valencia, the one thing I would say about them as well is they are better away from home in terms of goal scoring. If you look at their La Liga record, there's an awful lot of 0-0s and 1-1s in their last 10-15 La Liga games. Sorry, they have scored two against Real Madrid, in fairness, but then other than that, you're talking Levante, Bilbao, Villarreal, who are struggling, Huesca and Vallecano, the only sides they've scored more than two or more goals, sorry, against in recent times. So in a way, them having to come out and attack us might give us the spaces that we crave in terms of how we play. It's whether we take those chances. But I agree with you guys. I think we've got to go out there with almost the arrogance of saying, well, we got two goals on you. What have you got? That's the way.
There, Chris, is, as Dave said, yeah, they missed a couple of cracking chances against us. They really did, in exactly the same way as Napoli did. But in those games as well, we've missed some sitters. You know, you look at the couple that Lacazette missed. And for all the two goals he scored are fabulous, you're looking at him thinking, what a better player than that.
Could have been 5-1, but equally it could have been 5-4, couldn't it? It's one that we'll of course cover on the radio show. Keep going old school, live show after the game. Who's on, Jace? Do we know who's on Thursday?
We do indeed. It is Josh Dawe, Ellis Mel. Fuck Ellis.
Oh,
and that London guy, Carl. So if you do need to go home early, the tube will be okay.
Yeah. I mean, based upon that lineup, it's probably one to give a miss, to be honest. But I'm joking. Of course I'm joking. No, it'll be a good show as usual. And always good to get a good fuck Ellis in early, nice and early. So good times. Okay, so tune in for that. The last thing I want to cover before we go into listeners' questions, which we'll try and cover as many as we can, but there have been a lot. So apologies in advance if you don't get yours read out. We just don't like you. No, of course we do. But the last question I want to ask you both is, I know this is a little bit early and we'll probably do a whole pod on this at some point, but this summer is going to be, obviously, it's going to be a lot of changes, whether we win the Europa League or not, and therefore whether we qualify for the Champions League or not. So I'm not going to play what happens if. I'm just going to say right now, what priorities you think need to be changed. And when I look at Unai Emery's situation, there's been a lot of people who've said, you know, he's got to bring in his own players. And I completely agree with that, because I do think that, as you said, Josie, yeah, he did bring in five in the summer, but I think two of those were already done deals in Lichtsteiner and Leno. Torreira, I think, was a player he wanted, as was Guendouzi. And who's the other one? I'm missing the other one. Who was the other one we signed?
No.
Sokratis, who I think, from what I can gather, the framework was in place and he just gave it the nod. So again, that seemed like one that was fairly close to being done, Chris, full stop.
Chris, before you go, the one thing, okay, you don't hear Brendan Rodgers moaning about his squad. You never hear Gus Hiddink moaning about the squad wherever he goes, okay? Whatever's going to happen, I know it's imperative any manager going to a new club does the best of what he's got. I find all this, he needs to change the whole squad. I find that just pure excuses, utter nonsense.
I think this is where I want to expand it to. For me, this summer is not going to be about the manager. It's going to be about those above him. And I would say that if you look at where we are right now, and people always point to the Denis Suarez signing, you know, oh, Emery got his choice of player and that's who he went for. Look at that. That, to me, is a flawed argument. He was basically talking up the idea that we needed to replace Rob Holding. He was talking up the idea that we needed to replace creativity in the midfield, because people forget we lost Mkhitaryan for a long period of time. We had the injury to Aaron briefly at the turn of the year. We had the problems with the three big name players that went out. He was told basically, you know, he wanted players, and those from above, Josh or Stan or whomever it was, said no, loans. And it feels like that edict came from the top. So based upon that, I suppose I'll put it this way to you. I'll start with you, Jace. Does it matter who is in charge in this summer if we don't get our ducks in a row? There's talk of Edu coming in now, but it comes from the top, doesn't it? If we don't get this right, in terms of the funds available and going after realistic players, because we aren't signing big name players, forget that. It's stupid. It's got to come from the top, hasn't it? They've got to back this manager, whether it's 40 million or 40 quid. They've got to back the manager, and they've got to be public about what they're willing to do. Do you think that's the case?
Do you know what? What's going on above Unai is an absolute mess to me. Okay, it just looks a mess. Obviously, you know, we've covered this all season. I don't know how many times we spoke about it when there was talk of Ivan going. There's always going to be a power struggle because these guys are ambitious blokes. Lo and behold, Mislintat is the victim in all this, or the casualty rather. They are going to have a list of players that they want this summer. Apparently, we're about to post a £70 million loss for the last financial year. So obviously, you know, that has to be taken into account on the balance sheet somewhere. You know, we've seen reports of £40 million available, of £100 million available. There's all sorts of rumours flying around. If you're going to keep Unai, yes, you've got to back him. But ultimately, if there was a footballing identity to this club and how we want to play football and how we want to move forward, you know, it's about the ethos of the club, but rather than more than anything else, if you know what I mean. So certain types of players should be brought in. It's the whole point of having a director of football, etc. But right, these are the players, mate. You're the coach. Make the best of them. Which is what Unai's done his whole career, as far as I'm aware. You know, he's never been a guy to go out and sign players. It's always been, there's been Monchi there or somebody else. What's happening above him? You know, look, your guess is as good as mine. You know, we hear rumours. You hear all sorts of things going around. Nobody really knows. But I think, you know, you've got to be looking at that midfield. You've got to be looking at more mobility in it. You've got to be looking at centre-backs, if you know what I mean. You know, I was surprised when we brought Socrates. I was talking to the boys on the live show after the show. And the question, I asked them both question, you know, look, would you have taken Johnny Evans over Socrates? And it's not having a go at Socrates now, okay? Let alone leave out what I think of him. And they both said yes, knows the league, knows how to manage a defence, etc. Do you know what I mean? It's things like that. We have to pick an ethos of the way going forward. If you look at the under-18s, if you look at the under-23s, that hasn't just happened this season. Years of work has gone into developing those teams. You know, you'll get a new player coming in every now and again. But, you know, who is the guy who went to Wolfsburg, took Freddy with him? The Dutch guy.
Oh, Christ. Oh, give me a minute. I'll look it up.
God. But, you know, he, after Brady left, he set plans in motion.
Jonker. For
the youth system to develop. And I thought, you know, that's how youth systems develop. You go to any sporting club, you know, there's an ethos there. this is how we're going to play, lads. And they do it from under 11s, under 12s, under 13s, and they go forward like that. And that's the way the club has to develop. So, you know, I think it's a big ask for all involved at the moment. But, you know, Dave, I don't know how you feel about this. You know, how do you see the summer panning out?
Simple answer is, how many players you need to bring in or promote depends on how many you let go. And that's going to be the big question now, because you know that there are four on the way. There is talk of another three or four going. In order to get the wage bill down. So to get the wage bill down, you have to bring in players who may not be as highly rated, but with certainly big prospects. And how many of those, if it was eight, for example, have you got three or four you can promote from the under 23s now? Because that would certainly be a degree of pressure that's being exerted on him this summer. I personally doubt it. And I think one of the problems they've got is that the shining diamond, Emil Smith-Rowe, hasn't played all season or has just made his first appearance as a sub. So I think that puts him back a year on loan elsewhere, maybe still in Germany, before we call him back and get him in that squad and utilise him. There's possibly the chance of Saka or someone like that getting promoted.
Reece Nelson as well, coming back.
Reece Nelson may or may not come back. He's been blowing hot and cold in Hoffenheim. So was it Hoffenheim?
Yes. Yeah.
So it depends what reports have come back on him. But, yeah, that's the number we're looking at. And as for who, don't ask me who. You know I absolutely hate the speculation side of it.
Well, the thing, sorry, guys. You know, if you're promoting from under 23 side, that's a massive ask on young players. There's only one batch of really young players who I've seen come through in my lifetime in one fell swoop who've succeeded, and that's that famous United class of whatever. You know, 90, whatever.
Nice. Arsenal 89.
Well, you know, look, you know, they had a couple of seasons coming through, didn't they?
And Arsenal, you know. 71 as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't born then.
Really?
Are you sure?
I've had a long middle
round. Funny enough, I did. I actually did. But it's that side of it. A mate of mine, I said on the live show this week, a mate of mine made his debut for Fleetwood Town this week, okay? Macaulay, I used to work with him. Brilliant kid. But he got let go season four last by Cardiff City under 23s. Okay, you know, he's played against the likes of Christiansen, all these guys. He's played against them under 23s. And his words to me were, "Look, you know, I should have gone out on loan. If I'd have gone out on loan and you know done it in an adult league, I'd have been better prepared. As it was, I just stayed in that under 23 side and rotted, so to speak. And when it came time to make a decision on me, I was out the door. And now I don't care how high a quality the under 23 league is. Okay. It's no substitute for coming into a male league. You know, put them in the championship for a season, let them get experience. Because I just got a bad feeling about this. You know, if we're that desperate to bring that wage bill down and we're that desperate to get players at the door, well, okay, Aaron Ramsey's gone. You've got to replace him. Danny Welbeck, you've got to replace. These players aren't cheap to replace. We only paid 17 million quid for Danny Welbeck.
You know? I suppose the only thing you've got to look at, as Dave said, you know, we've got four confirmed departures. There's another, I think they're looking at trying to find buyers for Carl Jenkinson and Mohamed Onene, which, you know, is not going to get a lot of money in, but it will reduce the wage bill. I don't know if either of you have heard the same sort of thing I've heard, but the talk is that there could be potentially one, maybe two larger names shown the door. I personally... I don't like to pick on players, but I'm going to do exactly that. For me, Mustafi and Xhaka are both not good enough at this level. And it's not just that they've had good spells and they've had good parts. But I think if we're going to move on as a club, they strike me as two players that just haven't improved. And look at the ages. I don't think they're going to get better now. And I would rather we gamble on younger players and try and get those in on lesser money and take what we can get for those two.
To be fair, Chris, you know, I mean, look, you look at Mustafi, from both sides of the coin, I think he needs a fresh start.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, the fans are against him now. You look at him stat-wise, he outperforms, you know, on clearances, tackles, all the big stuff, okay? All the stuff you want defenders to do. He outperforms Socrates. He outperforms a lot of our defenders. But his mistakes are highlighted, and they're big ones. And, you know, it's gone past the point of no return. So getting rid of him is fine. Xhaka, if you can get a more mobile player in who's got a similar skill set, fantastic. Because that mobility we're lacking. But you look at the glaring ones for us. Henrik Mkhitaryan gives you zero return on £1 million a month going at the door. Henrik Mkhitaryan, I've tried defending Mkhitaryan this season, but to be quite frank, his performances have been less than bang average. I'd rather keep Socrates than Henrik Mkhitaryan.
I'd rather keep both, but I take your point. I think the only sort of glimmer of hope I can give people, I suppose, a glimmer of hope, that one of the players that I'm sort of led to believe that we're in contact with or speaking to, is a certain lad who hasn't been having a great time this season at PSG. And that's Adrian Rabiot. Now that's one that I think, I know. And I think it's a gamble, but I think if it was something we could get done, it could be a potentially very good gamble in the fact that he doesn't have necessarily this famous mythical passing range that Granit Xhaka apparently has, that people keep telling me, which I think even you would have, Jace, if you were given the time that he's given against certain teams, but that's another story. The thing that I do like about Rabiot potentially is if you can get him right and you can get his attitude right, which, to be fair to him, yes, his attitude hasn't been brilliant off the pitch, but a lot of it has come from the behind the scenes, the agent talk, his mother, etc. But if you can get a player of that stature, it says to other clubs we're serious. Yes, he'd be a free agent, so we could probably afford it because we could pump the wages in. But for me, a player of that style and that stature transforms the midfield probably in one go, because you can put him with Torreira and you can say, right, you know, one of you can create, one of you can sit, but it can be either or. You can rotate. Whereas at the moment, we're stuck with that. Well, if we play Xhaka, we've got to put Ozil in the 10. If we play Ozil wide, we have to move somebody in centrally to cover that. If we play Guendouzi, we've got to have experience. There's never a straightforward sort of way out. Whereas if you've got a player like a Rabiot who knows the job, who's well regarded in Europe. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we're going to sign him, so don't anyone take that as read. All I can say is we've spoken to his people at this stage. That's all it is. And I'm sure we speak to people every day. And let's be honest, until we get a director of football or whatever the hell they're called these days, I don't think we're signing Danny, let alone anybody else. So it's going to be a long summer, but that caliber of player, if he's available on a free, which obviously he is, I think we have to be in that market. And I also think, like you said, Jace, about the Johnny Evans example, I think we need to start buying closer to home a little bit as well. You know, I'm all for us going to France, to Spain, to Germany, picking up some bargains again. But I think we need to start looking at players that are, you know, middle ground Premier League players, established, that can come in immediately and do a job. And not just an Arteta against West Brom job done, Jace, before you say it, because I knew that's what you were thinking.
No.
But yeah, I mean, that's obviously all to come. I just sort of wanted to get a feel for where people were in terms of views.
Dave, I mean, to me, Rabiot, you know, there's so much grief off the park with him. There's so much nonsense that comes along with him. I don't see the point in letting somebody like Rambo go for nothing. When, and then getting Rabiot in, who's going to want similar wages. It's going to be similar ball back wages. I think that's defeating the object. I mean, what are your thoughts, Dave?
First and foremost, anybody that you bring into this first team squad now needs to be not a disruptive element, because actually the one thing that we have got right is that they are together and they do have a great spirit. I've seen it at first hand. And they've got a good blend in there. So, yeah, Rabiot, you would worry about whether he would disrupt that, whether he's going to bring himself in as something better than what we've got. And I am the big I am. We've suffered from that in the past. We need to avoid it badly.
The only thing I would say to counteract that is we had the same worries about Aubameyang, and that didn't turn out too badly, did it? And
That's a good point. But I mean, I look at it. Okay, you know what is this team badly lacking? Okay, you need that mobile, creative midfielder, but you need gas.
And the other thing that I would say in favour of Rabiot as well is that people have to understand when you play for Paris Saint-Germain, you are in the spotlight. You are every single move is scrutinised, and you are billed as. The minute you sign for them, you're billed as a player that you know Europe is it would want, and everything you do should be perfect, and you should be winning, and they're mollycoddled at PSG. Everything is done for them. Sometimes a player needs to break out of that and actually drop down a level. And at this stage, I genuinely think a lad like Rabiot just wants to play football. And sometimes, it can go Aubameyang, it can go Nasri. It could go either way, but at that age and with that much talent, if you say to a guy, look, we'll give you whatever you want within reason to be the star of our midfield, I think a player like that might relish that opportunity. But obviously, it depends. You know, there's a lot of other clubs.
Chris, I'm not sure if stars are the way forward for us. I think we are looking at a money ball scenario here, where we get value for money, and a lot of that is often done via companies like Stats DNA, which we own. You know, we need real gas in this team. We've got to get a couple of quick players in. And, you know, you look at our big stars at the moment, the big earners, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, never perform.
Be interesting to see in the summer what comes and what goes, so... Right. Okay. Last 10 minutes or so, we're just going to rattle through some questions so that we can give you all some peace and quiet and I can be succinct for once. So we'll go for some questions first of all, and then Jason's going to give us Fives Forum. So I'm going to ping these questions at you quick fire and just give me some quick fire answers if you can, gents. So first one is Gunnar ATG. He says, would you be surprised? Hang on. Would you be surprised if he got gold? Okay, Danny, what have you done here? Honestly, Danny's behind the scenes and he's typed a question with half of it missing. I wonder if he's talking about Aubameyang and would he be surprised if he got golden boot this season? I'll answer that one. No, because this season's been pretty dreadful for people scoring goals. Let's try another one. Sorry, Gunnar ATG, if that's you, just blame Danny. You know, you pay peanuts, you get Danny. Dorf Gunnar, would it be easy for us to play Chelsea if Chelsea made it to the Europa League final? As we know, we played them before and rather played the alleged weaker team, Frankfurt, with whom we have no experience. We prepare for based on observational basis. What do you think to that, Dave? Who would you prefer and why?
I'd prefer Chelsea precisely for those reasons. We know more about them than we do Eintracht.
Like it. That's the kind of answers I want. I'd like Frankfurt because I kind of follow them in Germany, but that's just me being yes, funny. Jace, Jim Howson, after Sol Campbell's recent managerial success, quote unquote, can you see him at Arsenal?
Oof. One day, yeah, why not? You know, he's had a great start to his managerial career. Let's hope he goes on from strength to strength.
We definitely wish him all the best in terms of making a stand with promoting more black managers in English football. That's for sure, because we need to get more. And one day, I'd love to see a female manager at one level of the game. I wonder if that will ever happen. We shall see. But yeah, good luck to Sol. Josh, I presume that's Mr. Dorr. With Chris on the show again this week, will the podcast be finished and be able to listen to before we kick off against Valencia? Josh, you're fired. We don't collect your coat. We'll mail it to you. Thanks. Mike, if the appointment of Edu goes through, Dave, you can have this one. We expect a more systemic approach to scouting and transfers rather than looking for rejects from Barcelona. Are you for or against this idea, Dave, or are you very much... I love Edu like I do, but do you kind of look at it and think, well, I can't really judge until we've actually got him because we don't really know what he's going to bring?
Pretty much the latter part of that. But I do think that something he will bring is greater access to the South American market. And with our reluctance to deal with certain super agents now seeming to be in the past, I think that's a vitally important point.
Yeah, agreed. So you can expect Carlos Vela to return this summer. I'm sure we'd all like that. Jace, these are a couple of transfer-based ones, so we'll just kind of rattle through these. Hopefully we bring in several players this summer. This is from Jonathan Rusk. But if there's only one big marquee signing, who would it be, what position and why? Thanks, guys. Love your show. He can't be Welsh or play for Swansea, Jace. Because I know what you're going to say.
I love that kid. I've never seen so much gas in my life. Marquee signing. I don't think we're going to get a marquee signing. I'm not sure if the funds are there. If we are going to get one, I suppose centre back Skriniar. I'm going off John Welsh's reports on this. I haven't seen hardly any of him play. So, you know. If you want a midfielder, okay, you talk about Rabiot. I don't consider that a marquee signing. I'm not a fan of his. He's never impressed me when I've watched him. He's an undoubted talent, but I don't see him dominating a midfield. There's no names out there which really grab me. You know, we're not going to get a De Ligt from Ajax. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, like to get rid of Mustafi, Inter Milan, here's 30 million quid plus Mustafi. Can we have Skriniar, please? Or something along those lines. Do you know what I mean? It's going to have to be player plus cash to get a big name. But are we in the market for a big name player? As Dave initially said earlier on, you know, we're not shopping in those markets anymore. So I don't think it's there.
No, Oliver Schofield also says, who's your top transfer target for this summer? Honestly, Oliver, it's very open-minded. I could read you a list of players I like from France, but none of them are marquee. We are scouting heavily in that league. We had scouts at the Lyon game the other night, which is interesting, as did Everton. So might be one to keep an eye on for bargains. We've also got FC Abarro. Let's say we can only sign two players good enough to walk straight in to our starting 11, and that would be centre back, left back, right wing, left wing. Who are our biggest needs? What position and what positions, or who do you trust with the academy players returning from loans? I think we sort of have covered that one already. So thank you, FC Abarro. One thing I think we can probably all agree, as Jace has mentioned, we need pace this summer. I do think we need to be signing players that are quicker. Rhys Nelson, technically, would possibly tick one of those boxes if he kicks on in the summer. Other than that, yeah, I think we need to be looking at wide players and fullbacks who can offer us what Hector can potentially on the other side, because I'm still not convinced Kolasinac is the best of what we could get there. Billy TW, after hearing rumours, am I the only Arsenal fan that doesn't want Wilfried Zaha anywhere near Arsenal Football Club? No, Billy, you are not. I would rather watch a dose of hemorrhoids go through John Welsh than sign Wilfried Zaha. Live on camera, I might add. I think he's a cheat. I think he's overrated. I think he's very talented. But I also think he's a classic player who, if it was a Sunday morning, I would absolutely love kicking up in the air because he doesn't like it. So, no.
You couldn't catch him.
Oh, I'd catch him. I'd pull his hair and scratch him. But no, I'm not a fan personally. I think he's found his level at Palace, and I think he's a classic player who fits Palace. And if he goes anywhere else, I think he'll be a colossal failure. So I look forward to him signing for Spurs. And also, Matt Roberts says, if we had a limited transfer budget, who would you want Emery to have a talk with Freddie about who to bring in for the first team academy? Dave, I want to just give you that one because obviously you saw a little bit of this at the training ground and the youngsters and whatnot. My question to slightly change that from Matt is, would you like us to see or would you like to see us have a word with Freddie and the academy guys and say, look, give us your best five and give them a chance?
I think that we've already answered that, haven't we? I think we're talking about, unfortunately, it won't be Smith Rowe for another year yet, but there's Saka seems to be getting rave reviews. We've talked about bringing Rhys Nelson back. We've got Joe Willock, who's often involved in the first team on European and League Cup games. So you have a bunch of players there who might be ready and who, when you're talking about bringing them in as squad players, not necessarily starters, they would make a lot of sense in dealing with the budget issue.
But yeah, I think so.
Sorry, guys, but Dave, don't you think, you know, you look at this now, surely it's incumbent on us as a club, okay, to make sure these guys in the under-23s, in the under-18s, are ready to make the squad as a whole. You know, good loans, get them playing regular football, get them out in the world so they can, you know, get a bit of experience. That must be the priority. Otherwise, you're throwing away young kids, which could be an asset to the club going forward.
Christian Bielik, prime example.
Well, I was going to say that's what they're doing in certain cases. Where they think players will benefit from that, they're doing it. There are players who they would not want to put in the lower leagues because the style of football that they're being asked to play is not going to be any good for them whatsoever. Yeah. Mm. So that's the reason why we have a number that we keep and a number that we let go. And Christian Bielik, I hope he makes it. I really do. I think the problem with him is he's too nice a lad to make it at the top.
And the injuries is a bit of a worry, isn't it? He's had a lot of injuries for a lad so young. The one thing I would add to that as well is when we're talking about who we'd bring in, who we get out, we also have to remember we've got to meet a quota of homegrown players this summer in our squad, as with every summer. It's something that you can probably find out a lot more than I could tell you about if you go to George Bird's website. He's always very good across the youth, but we're going to have to make sure certain players are in that squad. So whether you rate or don't rate certain players, some of them will have to stick around to make that quota. So just keep that in mind. But I'd love to see Bielik. I think he's one that physically and along with Pegler-Zuelo, who it seems we're probably going to let go, which I think is a shame because I think, you know, he's got all the build of a player that could make it. And let's not forget, probably two of our best players at the club right now in Rob Holding and Hector Bellerin are hopefully, fingers crossed, going to be back, which for me, both of those walk into our first team defence next season. So something to keep in mind. Right, Jace, before what we're going to do now is Dave is going to leave us shortly. So if you've got 5 to 10 minutes, I've got a couple of other questions we're going to run through after Dave goes. But before Dave goes, I want to do Fife's Forum. Okay. So what have we got? What was the question and what were the responses we've had?
Right, Fife's Forum this week was, are you worried Arsenal fans are becoming like Chelsea, Man United, in constantly wanting the manager out? Does this make us look stupid? Noir Confidential says, yes, as a fan base, we're a bunch of arseholes, but we still have a long way to go before we reach Real Madrid fans' level of bastardry. Correct. Elaine Sharp says, the first defeat of the season saw people calling for Emery's head, even though we had just had a 22-game unbeaten run. That itself tells you that some fans are stupid. It worries me the kind of stupidity that is becoming infectious throughout the fan base. Femster of this parish. Love it when Femster's on. He's excellent to listen to. Big shout out to Femster. And he says, no one complained when Bruce Rioch was given the boot for a similar reason. If the internet was around back then, it would have been pretty similar reaction. Not saying we all agree with it, but it's how football fans are conditioned by the media now. Then we go down to Oliver Schofield. Yes and yes. Annoys the hell out of me. Thanks. N10. My problem is not that the random fan here and there are baying for Emery's blood. It's with the high-profile bloggers and podcasters doing so when they should know better.
Well, that rules.
I'm going to come back to this. They have more influence than they realise, and it's ridiculous how many of them are being petulant re-Emery. Andre Radescu says, do you think with the supposed Edu Cagagio appointments, oh, that's a question, that is. We'll come back to that question, Andre. And Mike says, definitely, everyone said we needed to be patient, but with the midst of an underwhelming season, a misfiring fatigued squad and a manager hunting season seems to have started. The problems are higher up, I'm afraid. That's the big worry. Dave, your thoughts?
If only I'd been listening to all that instead of typing in the chat box. This is the most professional moment of the show, people.
I'll cue you up by giving my answer, Dave. And I think the main one we want to touch on there, Jace, is rather than the Fife Forum thing, I think we should expand, because I think we've had some really good answers there from people. I think we should expand on that one about the podcasting and the influence. So that's the main question, Dave, really, is the how do you feel high-profile podcasters? Now, I think the quick answer I'll give to this is that we at ABW, we're one of the longest running Arsenal podcasts out there. I think that's a fact. If it's not, it is now. But I would not describe us as in any way high profile, nor would I describe us as Pied Pipers. I don't think we lead opinions. I think we've got a fairly good balance in the group, you know, excluding Ellis, obviously. Fuck Ellis. But everybody else, I think, give a fairly measured and balanced viewpoint, whether it's positive, negative, pro or against, whatever. I think we're fairly neutral. To sort of name check some of the other big ones, obviously our blog is probably the biggest out there. I think the guys over at what's the one Clive's on? Is it Miles?
Arsenal Vision, sorry.
Yeah, I think they're fairly high profile. I think the one, obviously, the elephant in the room is a certain fan channel. And I personally don't think that that speaks for the majority of the fan base. I think that's a very reactionary, very clickbaity, TalkSport-esque production, in my opinion. Might not agree with it, but that's how I see it. So I think that in response to that gentleman's point, yes, we can all influence, but ultimately people will make up their own minds. And as long as you provide a balanced, measured argument, if you will, and also have a sense of humour. You know, when you look at certain people's tweets, mine included, if you don't have, this is going to sound awful, if you don't have the intelligence to realise when someone is having a little wind-up or a gentle fish, that might say more about your mindset reacting to a tweet than it does about having a measured thought first before reacting to it. That's all I'm going to say. What do you think, Dave? I mean, obviously, you know, you've been around for a little while. You're still at the grand old age of 42. We all know that. So, you know, but you've been blogging for a while. You've seen both sides pre and post internet. So do you ever feel like you have a responsibility or an influence on those around you or those you speak to?
I don't consider myself to have an influence. I think what we tend to do is we tend to attract like-minded people, and which means that you tend not to influence people who obviously don't read and listen to you. I think the question is probably aimed more at, there are two blogs in particular. You mentioned Arseblog, and on his podcast today with James, he was fairly critical of Unai Emery, which I understand the reasons for. He explained it very well. He has a different reason for wanting Unai out to the other one, I think, that's being referred to, which is obviously Le Grove. And Pete, I think, blogs for an entirely different reason in the, I don't want to go into it too deeply, but he does want to generate a reaction. And so he will, you know, he was obviously anti the last manager long before anybody else. And he's turned very quickly on the current one. So, no, they're entitled to their views. Andrew, certainly for the years that he's put in and the people that he knows and all of the rest, all the good things that he's done, he's perfectly entitled to his opinion. I don't think he's that influential, if you like, because again, people are drawn to him because they like what he has to say.
And he's very measured, and I heard on today's pod, actually, there was a really good question from a bloke who I know really well, who's really good. You should listen out for that. Wink, wink.
Oh, God.
Sorry. That's me self-promoting, Jace. go on. I've cued you in, so you feel quite strongly about this one, don't you?
Yeah, it's this thing, Kieran. It's this side of it where, with regard to the manager, are we being, first of all, to the Vice Forum question first, as long as you're being honest about how you see it, I don't see an issue in what stance you take. As long as you can back up what you're saying, everybody will have different reasons, different perspectives. You put that tweet out there yesterday, if Xhaka doesn't go this summer, blah, blah, I'm going to spotlight an audience. Straight in. Keep Xhaka at all costs, okay? Yeah. We have a laugh about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a bit of fun about it. You know, we're not high profile in the same way EFTV is or Arseblog. We're not, okay? We are what we are. We're niche. We've got a loyal following, you know. You get a little bit of turnover, new people. Our responsibility to the people who listen to this show and to the live show is that we give an honest opinion. Now, you know, whether you want Unai Emery to stay or go doesn't matter a damn. But as long as you back up your argument with your honest opinion and how you see things going, that's fine. You know, yes, there are people who do it for hits and clicks. Yes, there are people who do this to make money. That's their bag. That's fine. You know, we do this for the love of doing this show, because you can be damn sure that none of us get paid for it. None of us earn a penny out of it. Do you know what I mean? We put more into this than we'll ever get out of it. What we get out of it is interacting with some brilliant people, which we'd have never met. You know, we've been lucky enough to share a beer with Dave when you had a soft drink because you don't drink. But, you know, we've gone to a game with Dave, Jeff Arsenal, Dom, all the boys. Do you know what I mean? You can run through them all.
Don't forget the Canadian wizard.
Yeah, the OG. I went and watched Arsene's last game with them. With Josh Dahl last year, okay? Met Lana, saw FK on the day, you know? I haven't seen FK for a while. You know, Raj, we've met some brilliant people. That's what we get out of this. We get to follow the team we love, you know, interact with some fantastic people in the chat box, on Twitter, wherever it is. It's bloody brilliant, and it's an absolute privilege to do this. But it's incumbent on us, and I've mentioned incumbent far too much recently, to be honest with the listener on what how we see it. That's our responsibility. It's not to Unai Emery. Unai Emery gets paid to do a job. Whether you want him in, whether you want him out, that's up to you. But just because he hasn't been there 22 years doesn't mean you can't have a view one way or the other. Hmm. And that's how I see it.
And if we all agreed, it would be a bloody boring world, wouldn't it?
Oh, you know, Jesus, yes. Half the fun I get is from baiting you.
I know. And the worst bit is I fall for it every bloody time.
You haven't for a while. You haven't for a while.
That's because I've been too busy. I haven't noticed. In fact, no, I've just learned my lesson. On match days, I stay out of the chat because I just think, no, I'm going to walk away.
You know what? Me and John sometimes message each other. John.
I know. I know you do. I see through these things.
And the people we always go for are the Lord Hillwood and you.
Yeah, I know. I tell you, we're so easy, aren't we? Right. Just before we get out of here, I'm just going to give some nods to a couple of people that have asked me questions. I might get one word answers from the guys as well, just to be nice, because I've got time to do it. So Daniel Johnson sent me three and one. He said fifth in the league and Europa League final. Is that okay for a first season or failure? I think it's absolutely fine, particularly if we win it. For the current squad, can you name six players that should start or be fighting for the top three? That's probably one for the summer. And then he also said Chambers, someone who can be successful to be used next season or time to say goodbye. I'd like to see him get one more chance personally. I think Jace, you're the same opinion of me on that one. So Callum Chambers, I think I wouldn't mind just giving him one more go. You know, I think he's got something to give us. And
I totally agree.
And if and even if it doesn't work out, he's English, young, shop window, sold in January, you know, worth a go.
Season before last, him and Holding were forming a really nice partnership.
Exactly. That would be the future, wouldn't it? Especially with Sokratis and Koscielny to learn from. So
Mavropanos coming through as well. Yeah. Get him out on the loan, bring him in. That's how we're going to succeed. Mm. You know, people have written him off, yet he's done quite well at Fulham this season. In a team that can't defend, yes, he's had to go to play Holding midfielder.
Yeah,
but do you know what? That's just going to make him a better footballer.
Exactly. Yeah, agreed. Marcus at MSH141180 talk to me about potential of appointment of Eddie as technical director. We've kind of covered that with Marcus, but we'll probably go into more depth if and when it happens. I think that's probably the way to answer that one. Pete Kenley, as of writing this tweet, the royal baby has yet to be named. If you could name it after any pod member, who would it be and why? Tappy Tappy. Obvious, really, that one, isn't it? Answers itself. Jimmy R, regular, DC underscore Gooner, up the United. When I'm Jimmy. It's almost unanimously agreed that Arsenal need a first choice centre back next season. Do you think said new first choice centre back should be paired with A, Sokratis, B, Holding, C, another first choice centre back? I'd love to see Rob Holding get a start regularly next season if he's fit. Anybody got anything different to that? I mean, Sokratis is the obvious one, but if Holding's fit, I think we all agree we'd like to see him start the season next year as first choice.
Absolutely, but our number one centre-back is Koscielny. I don't care how we have to nurse him through the season. He's the one.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm harsh on Koz, okay?
But you are.
I am, but, you know, not being funny. His brain farts mean they have to be.
He's got better, hasn't he, with age?
He's got the Leicester game with him and Socrates are floundering under that long ball. Mm. It's a particular low point, but he has been spectacular this season.
Yeah.
And you know, he's one of those characters. I don't think he's a captain. Okay? I don't think he's a leader. I think he leads by example. I think he needs something a bit more vocal. But I just think he's been magnificent this season, and I'm so chuffed for him that he's come back so strongly, because he gives you everything, you know?
Yeah.
Whether there's a brain fart or not, you can't question his commitment.
Yeah, and of course it's whether he wants to stay in the summer, because he will have a few offers to go back home to France, and he might look at it and think, do you know what? I think Andrew touched on this on our blog the other day. He does have the look of a player who's maybe just coming to a crossroads about, is it worth putting himself through another season where he could end up, you know, in real problems in later life, or maybe go back to a league where he's sort of able to see out his career, possibly with Lorient. But we shall see. I would certainly keep him if he wants to be around. Alonso Spencer, who I spoke to a number of times. Hi, Alonso. He says, so why did that punk Emery become so selfish and mess around with experimenting with Guendouzi and playing Mkhitaryan instead of Ozil, Arsenal's best creative talent in midfield? And do you think it cost us games by not starting him and Rambo? It's benefit hindsight, Alonso, but yeah, there's an argument for that, and maybe we learned how good our midfield could be with those two in it a bit too late, would be the all I'd say to that. Gunas podcast, apparently technical directors are priced by the length of their surname, hence our pursuit of Edu. Like that. Question, what was fucking Demba Ba not available? Denver Bar, what a name. El Comandante 84, another gent of this parish. If we don't win the Europa League now, or certain to finish outside the top four, now that we're certain to finish outside the top four, has Emery met his requirements or remit? How long do you think he'll be given? So we've touched on the first bit. I think, as we've all said in this pod, 2 years. He needs to be given the 2 years and see how he is.
I'm not sure. See, I got to be honest here. Here we go. That question you got mixed up with earlier on.
Yeah.
ATG was asking if Emery would get the boot at the end of the season.
Okay. So
let's go on all of us. Okay. My belief is, if he wins the Europa League, you can't touch him. He's, you know, he's delivered you silverware, and he's, you know, he's got us in the Champions League next season. Fantastic.
Hmm.
If he doesn't win Europa League, I look at our league form, and I get rid of him. Okay.
A question has to be asked.
What are your thoughts, lads?
Yeah, I'll just give a very quick answer to this. I think you have to ask questions, and I think you have to set clear expectations that if he's to be given the money to spend the second season, there has to be results. For me, that's simple. I think regardless of what happens, you give him that second season. He's on a 2-year contract. It's very easy to part ways if it doesn't work out second season, but you give him a chance. What do you think, Dave?
He'll get another year.
There you go. We're unanimous. And would you, Jace? I mean, would you give him that second year?
Only regardless? If he wins the Europa Cup.
See, you would part ways if he doesn't.
Yeah, I just look at the lack of style, the lack of performance this season. And I don't see how he's going to improve it. He's, you know, I'm sorry, that's the way I see it. But if he wins our Europa Cup, you've got to give him another season. And God, I hope he wins it.
If we sack him and end up with Mourinho, Jace, it's on your head. All right?
No,
that's all I'm saying. So the listeners have got it clear.
I didn't say Jose.
I'm just putting it out there. If we end up with that pillock, then it's on you. So, yeah. You watch your mouth. Okay, and the last one I want to give a nod to, because it only just came in recently, Ryan Fletcher, who says, the reason I wanted to make notice of this one, he says, I'll be watching along like always tonight. So thank you for that. And he says, do you think players like Zaha, Fraser, Van der Beek, Umtiti and Wan-Bissaka would improve our squad or not? I'll just say that with Umtiti, massively, because he's one of the best defenders in the world and I absolutely adore him, and he's French. What more could you ask for? Fraser, I'm not sure about. It's not because he plays at Bournemouth. I'm just not sure whether he would make the grade at a top level club, but I'll you know, who knows? We've touched on Zaha. Wan-Bissaka is a huge talent, but we don't need another right back. And Van der Beek, I think, will go to a club with a bit more dollar than we've got. So, yeah, that's probably where I'm going to go with that one. So, thank you to everybody who's asked a question.
Wait, 1 second. Sorry, mate. Mm. Andrew Rodescu is asking, do you think with the supposed Duke Gargio appointments, we are looking at the wrong markets, Spain and Brazil, considering the best young talent at the moment is coming from England and France? Quick yes or no from both of you.
No, because surely any director of football worth his salt this season or in the modern day is not just going to scout in the countries they know. They're going to scout everywhere. So, no, that's no.
Dave?
Same no.
Okay, cool.
There we go. Right, gentlemen's nods, and then we're going to wrap this one up. So, Dave, you can go first. Oh, he's forgotten. I can tell by the look on his face. Have you got one ready?
I've been doing that for the last couple of minutes. Last person who followed me, it's Sam Pinsey Bro. That's at Sam Pinsey Bro AFC. So, hello, Sam.
Excellent. I'll give mine just while we're here. Mine is actually two. We mentioned him every week, but it's Noir Confidential at Noir_con. He's brilliant. He knows his stuff, and he's been giving me some recommendations to watch on telly via DMs this week. So, and that's not a euphemism. So thank you, Noir. He overheard me talking about Dexter the other night, so he's filled me in on other things to watch. So thank you, Noir. Much appreciated. And a little nod to Gav as well, who's been helping me out with a side project. He's at SheWar. Go and look at his stuff. It's awesome. So there you go. Just remember that one. Dave, who have you got for us? Oh, Dave's on mute.
He's on mute.
No,
of course I'm not.
There he is.
There must be something wrong with the line.
Blame Chase.
Yeah, I reckon it was a Wi-Fi. Anyway, the ATG Gooner who asked the question about would we expect Emery to go this summer, just realised it's my old mate Arthur. He's been reading me for a long time. We've met up a couple of times, once at Reading away when he bought his young lad who ate me out of the hotel. And that was it. That's him. Thank you, Arthur.
Good times. Superb. Right. We're going to wrap it up there then. Thank you all for tuning in. I say we probably don't thank you guys and girls enough for tuning in. If you're a new listener, we always like to hear from new listeners. So if you are new to tuning into us, do get in touch and tell us what you think of us, good or bad. We don't mind. We've got thick skins. And thanks as always to Danny, who's been quietly monitoring in the background, probably naked. Doing all sorts of horrendous things to himself. So there's an image to leave this on. I can't think of no better way to leave it. My thanks to you, Dave, and to you, Jace, for coming on tonight. Much appreciated to you both.
Thank you.
And I shall leave the immortal words to the immortal man to close off this podcast. Jace?
Danny, switch this shit off.